Welcome to Pop Culture, the podcast that brings soft drinks to the top of the menu. I'm Kat Brown, arts journalist and author, and in this episode, I'm interviewing my illustrious co-host about her drinks habits. She's a film journalist. She's Empire Podcast's beloved geek queen. She's the author of the brilliant book Women vs. Hollywood, The Fall and Rise of Women in Film. She's possibly the UK's number one connoisseur of fancy afternoon teas. It's Helen O'Hara!
Oh man, you give me a much bigger intro than I give you. Now I feel terrible. Damn it.
Don't worry, you're not getting a Christmas present.
Oh, well, that's fantastic then.
Helen, what are we drinking today?
We are drinking Humble Warrior Natural Immunity. It's apparently powered by plants, and this is the pineapple ginger flavour.
I mean, I am a very humble warrior. I feel
said that about you.
Lovely to be. And I am powered by ginger as well. Oh no, that's powered by plants. I'm powered by both. That's perfect. I love pineapple as well. Let's go.
Oh, it's quite gingery.
Yeah, I was not expecting actual dry, fresh ginger. So often the ginger is, I've vaguely been near a ginger ale once and that was it. That's really good.
New to me as well, so I'm excited to try this. This is apparently, 26 calories per can. Not terribly sugary and purely from plants.
Mm. We're told, so each good. Can delivers 100% of your daily vitamin C, so there's all the punch you need to own it like a warrior. Thank God for that.
I'm not sure I would replace all of your other immunity-boosting foodstuffs with this, but it is very nice.
I read a really interesting wellness review in the Times the other day of shots. So like ginger shots, turmeric shots, all of that sort of stuff. I think only one rated more than one or two out of five. The dietitian nutritionist who was reviewing them was just like, yeah, this is just mostly a bit pointless.
Oh, well. I'm not sure this is going to cure my cold after all. Dag nabbit.
Well, I'm feeling much healthier just by drinking it, but it may just be because, again, I'm very easily led by beautifully designed cans.
Which it is. Yeah, that's true. This is a very sexy looking can. A sort of lovely, would you call that teal?
Yeah, probably.
At the top with some yellow and white highlights.
Well, pineapple and ginger, though, a combination I don't think I've ever had before. But sure, go with it.
Absolutely.
Who are you and where do you come from?
My name's Helen O'Hara. I'm from Northern Ireland. Came over here for university and have never really gone back. Obviously, I have for visits. Hi, Mum. But, you know, not permanently since. I've been kicking around doing journalism in London for literally 20 years this week.
Oh my gosh, congratulations! Yeah.
Which makes me feel terrifyingly old, but here we are. I'm a lifelong non-drinker, not for any particular reason. So it's not a religious thing, although fair play if it is for you. It's not a traumatic history of alcoholism or similar diseases in the family. I just never really started. I will say, actually, there is a history of teetotalism in my family.
Oh,
my grandfather
wow.
was teetotal, and my parents drink, but like, you know, a couple of times a month kind of thing. They'll drink if they go out, maybe, but there's hardly ever any drink in the house. I mean, there'll be some weird things in the cupboard, mostly for baking with, and people who know me will be going, oh yes, baking, that makes sense for her. But it wasn't a very drinky culture as a house. So maybe that did affect my decision to just never really start.
So what you're saying is you were brought up with healthy social boundaries, good load of self-esteem, self-respect. I mean, what an outrageous childhood, Helen, honestly, you poor deprived thing.
It was pretty hellish, yes.
When we first met, which was about 2005, you had just finished a year at Empire as their junior trainee writer, and they had very sensibly snapped you up. And I just started as junior trainee writer on their Empire scholarship that you had also won. I was so surprised that anybody could go out ever without drinking booze. Thank you so much for persevering with my incredibly immature attitudes to anything over the last 20 years. But also, how do you get through university? How do you get through a media career, particularly early 2000s? And also, how do you get through living in Britain, which is not necessarily noted for its healthy attitude to alcohol?
Well, I mean, I come from Northern Ireland as well, which ditto. Honestly, by the time I got to university, I'd sort of been through it already for about 4 or 5 years, where it had been weird that I didn't want to drink. One of my best friends, hello Justin, has literally never given up the quest to get me drinking. And I've never said never. It's not a moral position, it's not a judgment, it's just I have never wanted to. If I ever want to, I will have a drink. But I have never particularly wanted to. Perhaps something's wrong with me because I never quite saw the point. We had a lot of those, you know, talks that you have in school about how certain things are bad. We had a lot of the ones about how smoking was bad, and I was like, well, I don't understand why anyone smokes, so that's an easy one. Okay, cool. And kind of similarly with drinking, you know, I don't know if they harped on about drinking being bad very much. I can't imagine that they did at a Catholic school in Northern Ireland in the 90s. But I never quite understood why people were doing it.
So we're going back to that healthy sense of boundaries, self-respect. I mean that is quite weird, Helen.
It doesn't sound right, but I guess there's an element of that. But I just never really cottoned onto it. And I think, again, the issue of non-judgment really does come into it because I benefit from people around me drinking. So if everyone else's inhibitions are lowered, if everyone else has like a 50% chance of remembering what they did that night, my inhibitions are also lowered and I can rely on everyone not really paying attention to or remembering what I did that night. Do you know what I mean? So I absolutely benefit from other people drinking. And I'm very conscious of that, actually. That's why it's never been a moral position. It's never been in any way kind of condemning drinking in my friends and in other people. It's just been, I just didn't quite get why I had to do it as well. And so, you know, I did get a bit of pressure in the early years and when I went up to uni and stuff like that. I will say, though, I think girls get less of that pressure than guys do. Mm. I think women understand that there might be reasons you don't want to get drunk. And I don't think men will buy that from each other. And I know of two non-drinking male friends who both, independently, they never met, that I know of. but they both claim to be allergic to alcohol because that was the only way that their peers would stop bringing it up at every opportunity. And even then, it didn't entirely always work. I think I'm just bloody-minded enough as well. At a certain point, if people were still giving me grief for it, I was like, well, that is very much on you, not me. And I have found, and again, this may not be everyone, but I have found people have this image that non-drinkers are judgmental. And, you know, I think there's a lot of fear in among drinkers that I'm sitting silently judging them. My experience is very much the other way around. My experience is very much that drinkers are judging me for not drinking and are quite angry sometimes at me for not drinking. And I have had a couple of occasions, not very many, but a couple where somebody tried to spike my drink.
Oh, God.
Not for any nefarious means, but just so I could, quote unquote, enter the fun.
Oh, my God.
But the thing about never having been a drinker is that no matter how little alcohol you think there is in it, and no matter how tasteless you think the alcohol is, I can tell because I have never trained myself to like alcohol. So I can actually, you know, even that little bit of, you know, whatever, vodka or something that you just spiked my orange juice or whatever back in those days with, I can absolutely smell
and
it.
And nothing says fun like enforced violation of boundaries. That's,
yeah, we've come a long way, all of us, I think.
Yes. Certainly a few years ago, there was a real concern over what to say if people were like, oh, why aren't you drinking, whatever. Whereas now, fingers crossed, people are more, you do you, that's lovely. It wasn't, oh my God, are you personally ruining my night by not drinking porn star martinis?
It sometimes did seem like I was attacking them. And I'm like, I'm just over here trying to have a disappointing drink.
Here's my overpriced tonic water. Thanks very much.
Oh, I actually went to a restaurant this weekend that when myself and a couple of others around the table ordered Diet Cokes or Cokes, brought out mixer bottles.
Oh my God, no.
I'm like, come on, guys. This is not rocket science. I mean, I guess that way you're not getting watered down Coke. You're not getting flat Coke.
You're just getting a tiny amount of Coke.
Tiny amount for a large sum of money. Presumably it wasn't written down on the menu.
Well, thinking of menus, what do you usually go for? And actually that's very vague because that could be a crap drinks menu, or it could be a gorgeous and expansive one.
Genuinely, most of the time when I go out, and this is beginning to change, but historically, 9 times out of 10 in my life, when I have gone out, my options have been very limited. And I have probably ended up having something like a Diet Coke because that's what there is. If I'm ordering water, I tend to go for tap water, partly because I think it's environmentally friendlier than bottled water, partly because maybe this is a stereotype of non-drinkers, but I do get the resentment of having to pay large amounts for my drinks. And I realize this isn't good for the restaurant industry and they're making a lot of money from drinks and they need me to drink, but I do kind of resent paying £3 for a bottle of water when I could just have tap water, which tastes broadly the same. I mean, there are some very nice bottled waters, but not that many. So often I end up just having tap water. I will maybe get one drink to show willing. It might be a Diet Coke on many menus because there's so little else. If I have the option, even of a Sprite Zero, I get excited because I'm like, well, at least I have something that doesn't have sugar but also doesn't have caffeine and won't keep me up late. Because honestly, I'm that terrible person as well. It's like, well, I don't want sugar because I don't want to be just drinking a chocolate bar when I could be eating one all the time. Obviously, sometimes I'll have a sugary drink and that's fine. I don't always want caffeine because sometimes it's past my bedtime and my bedtime is very early because I am that other hated and feared group, a morning person.
And also a runner.
Admittedly. So if I don't want caffeine and I don't want sugar, on many menus, that just leaves me sparkling water. Mm. I mean, nothing else.
I became my own worst person the other day when I was in a coffee shop and ordered a decaf hazelnut mocha with sugar-free syrup. I was like, you revolting person. This is why you drank black coffee for years and years and years and years. But I mean, sometimes you just...
Sometimes, yeah. You know, I have been known to get a decaf myself just because I want the experience of having a coffee, a nice drink in my hand, and I don't want to be up.
The poor person taking my order was just like, what even is the point of you? What are you doing? What is in your fridge? And also outside of the fridge, not all soft drinks have to be stored.
Well, I am trying to be more adventurous. And not just since we started doing this podcast, but even sort of before that. Again, because there are now options, I want to support them. I want to go out and I want to buy those more interesting options. So I've tried the sort of seed lips and stuff. I've got a couple of bottles of Bax Botanics, which is another sort of alcohol-free spirit at the moment, which I quite like. At Christmas, my family, some of us drink, but not terribly heavily, the clinking sack of bottles being carried out of our house after Christmas is genuinely about 75% Schlur. So even though it's packed with sugar, I will absolutely be having Schlur over Christmas. That is pretty much
single-handedly keeping that brand going, Helen.
Honestly,
well done.
Myself and my sister could easily go through a bottle at, you know, at a meal. It's just so drinkable. It is sugary, but it's just very nice.
Well, on that note, how would you describe your palate?
Well, that is the other reason that I've been having, you know, Seedlip and Bax and various tonic waters and things like that, is I am trying to be less dependent on sugar as a drink flavour. The downside of never having trained myself to like beer or wine, because I think everybody pretty much has to go through a phase of training themselves into
those. Same for coffee.
Flavors. Yes, absolutely. So I never bothered with those. I did train myself into liking coffee because I wanted something that would be sociable when I went to university. My aunt gave me this really lovely coffee set and I was like, right, I am going to learn to like coffee and then I can have people over to my room and I can make them coffee.
Oh, that is such a pre-college montage moment.
It was, now looking back, I'm like, oh. And it did happen a couple of times. I had people over. We had coffee.
That's lovely.
So I can train myself into that, but nothing really else. So I'm now trying to, I guess, open myself up to new ideas and train myself into liking new things. And I don't mind these seed lips and things like that. My only issue is that I do find the flavour of the tonic often overwhelms anything else that's going on in the drink. So I need some other options as mixers for those. And then these kind of drinks that we've been trying for the podcast have been fantastic. I've been really enjoying those. And I've been getting in things like Dash and Trip that are just, you know, a little bit more interesting than water, which is great. And, you know, I carry around my refillable water bottle all the time, every day. But you do want to branch out a bit. And you also want to reflect the moment. If something's happening, if it's a party, a wedding, if it's a end of whatever, you want to look like you're celebrating with everyone else. And people do judge you for having a tap water in those circumstances.
It's so interesting, isn't it? That visible issue around drinks. Because you're so right. If you have a glass of tap water, then people are sort of like, oh, you're reminding me of the outside world. Or a place where I haven't had my 2 litres a day or something like that. And
You're just not part of the ritual that we're doing. We're embracing a ritual here, which is that we are all drinking to the health of whatever, and you're not really part of it. So I have actually at weddings very frequently taken the glass of champagne when offered it for the toasts and touched it to my lips, because I'm not going to make a big fuss at a wedding, especially when people have put a huge amount of time and effort into planning and sort of go, actually, do you have a sparkling non-alcoholic alternative? Because I really don't like this at all. And it's just for the sake of touching
it to
my lips.
You pick your moments, exactly.
I mean, this is it. You have to pick your battles. Historically, my attitude to all of the limitations has just been to mutter about it privately. But now I have a podcast, so I can air all my grievances in public.
Our inner middle-aged white men are coming out at last. What drives you completely nuts about not drinking?
Public enemy number one has to be not having a fricking menu at all. Just not having a soft drink menu written down anywhere in your restaurant. Mm. And you would not believe how many places do not have one. Or a couple of places that I've been recently, they have a short list of mocktails, which have been very nice, the ones I've tried. And they may have a tea and coffee list. But if you want anything else, you have to physically ask. And if you want to know the prices, you have to ask and look like somebody who's concerned about the difference between a £2.50 and a £3 Coca-Cola and risk being judged for that, which in a cost of living crisis, none of us want to be judged for that. So nobody wants to ask, but it's all the more important to know what you're ordering. And I find it endlessly frustrating. When I ask a member of staff, the answer tends to be, oh, we have everything. But what they mean by everything is Coke, Diet Coke, Fanta, lemonade, and maybe an orange juice or an apple juice.
I mean, the six essential food groups right there.
I'm just scunnered with all of them. And by the way, often if it is, you know, an orange juice or an apple juice, sometimes I can see over the bar and I can see it's a supermarket value brand orange juice that you were pouring into a glass, adding too much ice to, and then charging me £3.50 for. One of the hills I will die on is that there should be soft drink measures. I should know what I'm getting and it should be written down on a freaking menu.
Well, fingers crossed we can horrify some restaurants into doing that over the course of this series. Do you have any drinks memories, either from afternoon tea or otherwise, that live rent-free in your head?
I think, honestly, you mentioned it when we talked here as well, but getting to the Fat Duck and finding they had a soft drink flight was genuinely... And I actually didn't even end up ordering it that day because I was like, actually, some of these are beer substitutes or wine substitutes. Mm-hmm. They might not be for me. But I was just so grateful that it existed. And they had a fantastic list of mocktails and mixed juices as well. So I was well catered for even without that. But just going to anywhere like that and feeling taken care of... Another example is actually, and this is a slightly weird one because we don't tend to think of tea and coffee as soft drinks, talk about them as a totally separate category. But the first time I tried Lapsang Souchong and that kind of smokiness hit me was really like, oh, tea can actually be interesting. Why did no one tell me this before? This is fantastic. And so if that's on an afternoon tea menu, even if it doesn't really go with the rest of the tea, even if it's a very summery selection, I don't care. I'm getting the Lapsang. I just think it's amazing.
There's a huge amount to be said for tea that doesn't taste like lightly flavoured bathwater. Mm-hmm. And we should actually say to listeners that whilst we'd say Pop Culture is a soft drinks podcast, that includes pretty much everything that is non-alcoholic. So we will be going down some perhaps seemingly mad avenues in that. Helen, as a last question, what are you most looking forward to exploring on the podcast?
I'm really looking forward to learning about why some of this happens. So we have some people lined up who are going to tell us about the drinks that they make, why they make them that way, what goes into them, what are the decisions that have to be made, what are the forces that kind of shape the industry? So I've talked to someone who works with sugar levels in drink, you know, so we're going to talk to him and we're going to find out about what determines some of those decisions. Because I would just really like to understand why some of this is happening. And I feel like this is going to really, really help me with that and hopefully get me over some of these resentments. I'm going to become more zen as I go.
God, so that's going to be a boring podcast and we have no more resentments.
I have no more issues. Everything is wonderful. Also, just discovering some new drinks. I mean, I've already discovered one that you brought with you the last time we spoke. And I think that's going to continue because we're both very actively now on the lookout for anything we can find that's interesting. And also people are now getting in touch with us and telling us about amazing drinks we have to try, which is super exciting. So if you have any of those, please do drop us a line because we want to explore everything. I also, by the way, I'm very excited about exploring weird little untold stories and maybe doing some research on stuff. For example, what is sarsaparilla? It's in every Western story ever. I believe it's non-alcoholic, but I have no clue what it is. So maybe we can find out together.
I mean, that would be lovely because I literally have spent the last 20 odd years thinking it was a type of skirt. Well, I had a lovely email actually from Adam who said, personally, I'd love to hear a mention of Vedita. Delicious, easy to make and a million times cheaper than so many of the ghastly concoctions we're offered to drink. It's traditionally a tequila chaser, but as long as you skip that bit, it's a little known winner. And actually, I remember Vedita vividly from a London bar called Casita, where it was indeed a chaser. But I'm going to look that up because that was a very long time ago and we really want to find some more of that. Ooh. If you have anything that you would like to message into us, then please, by all means, contact the podcast, popculturedrinkspodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram @popculturedrinkspodcast. Send us your favourite drinks, send us anything that you'd like to explore, menus that you've seen recently that you'd like to celebrate or shame. That'll be wonderful. And we'll see you in the new year when we kick off proper. Have a lovely time. Bye.
Happy New Year.